Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the crazy surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL Draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Pennies Going in Raw is a production of iHeartRadio. The opinions expressed in the following podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide education and entertainment about the financial industry and the stock market. Enjoy!
On this episode of Pennies Going in Raw, we have a guy who is pro-Bitcoin and his rebuttals to everything we say.
You find out life's this game of pennies.
Oh, you guys know we only have a 40% runner. Hello? 40% right is a f***ing killing.
We've been compliant for too long. It's time we go to war.
I don't have a Roth.
Q knows so much about the market that his brain doesn't have enough room for grammar.
Hey, who told me about IDEX? It's going up a shit ton now.
Rob, 4%, baby.
No way.
4%.
You asked the exact same question with two words different.
It's like, f***, man, I just got dick whipped for like 20%, and now that f***er's up like 50.
I bet Warren Buffett never did that.
I'm just making this voice memo to call out unusual whales to a fight.
The pennies we need are everywhere around us.
Pennies.
Going in raw.
Featuring Dan, Deity of Dips,
and Hugh Honey.
Produced by Vinny
and Christian.
Let's go, baby.
Welcome back to another episode of Pennies Going in Raw. Today is Sunday, May 22nd. And before we get into our little Bitcoin debate, in 2020 hindsight, probably should have just had him on. We didn't expect to have a 23-minute recording, but we listened to it. We got our answers for it. But we made our guesses of what spot would be at the end of the week. And, you know, it's funny. Someone mentioned on Wednesday, they're like, so I listened to your podcast. You're talking about SPY. And we were mentioning the price of it, and they were like, yeah, the next day it's 4% different. It was like $12 different. Like, so the volatility of the market is insane right now. And I mean, it looked like it was going to close in the 380s, 370s. And then at the end of the day, it pops up to 389.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was kind of crazy because I had taken puts overnight on Thursday, and it was real small, but I had taken puts at like 406 Eastern, and I was on my way home when the market opened. I saw the market was up like 1%, and I was like, oh man, these things are gonna be cooked. And but I ended up holding, and so the puts themselves went from like down 50% to up 160%. And so I was at my old high school on Friday, and so I really didn't get a chance to, you know, be in front of the screens. But I remember like checking it, and it was like 10:30 in the morning, and SPY was at like, I want to say like 393 or something. And then I looked an hour later, like 11:30, it was like 385. I was like, holy shit. Just wild. And then it's funny because I was messing around with some of my buddies, and I was like, oh, like, you know, similar to what they did last week, you know, they're going to close it so that's, you know, barely down on the week. And I mean, SPY really wasn't like this is the crazy thing, you know, like we're seeing all these big intraday moves and stuff. And as you know, as traders, you know, of course, like we should see them. However, SPY really like isn't making that big of a move on like weekly chart. You know, inside the past 5 days, it's down 2.5%. I mean, Friday alone, it made a, let me see, intraday from up 1% to down almost 2%. That's a 3% move. And then back up to break even. I mean, that's like a 4.5% move on Friday alone. It's kind of crazy what we're seeing. And I mean, if you take away, you know, I don't know. It's just kind of crazy. Like I really don't know how else to say it other than it's really wild. You know, so obviously the market did close down 2.5% on the week. But again, like for all these intraday moves, like that's really kind of wild. I mean, what was it on Wednesday? The market was at 408. So the market was basically break even on the week. And since basically Tuesday to Friday, it moved down 2.5%. That in and of itself is wild. But again, you look at how much it's moving intraday, and it's moving intraday like 3-4%.
Yeah, no, and it's so volatile. Like we were just saying, and it up, down, up, down. And then there's always the fucking drastic moves out of nowhere. Those are the tough ones to handle. And those, I think, is like where the patience plays. Like you said, your puts were down 50%. But I mean, you look at it and it always has one of these things where it can just, hey, here's your money back.
Yeah, exactly. And okay, and so this is why. So I had taken like really small puts overnight, and that's why I typically don't really swing too much, too many options, because I mean it's really easy to get smoked. I mean the market was up like 1% overnight, and I mean not on like anything crazy new. So this is like the type of market where yes, volatility is definitely your friend, and if you get on the right side of a move, you can make 1%. I mean, hell, you can make a 2% move. Hell, yesterday you could have made 3% just in one move from being up to being down. However, that being said, I'm trying to be as stress-free as possible inside this market with all this volatility, because if you're just patient, like for me, what I've noticed is that the less trades that I take in a week, the more profitable I am and the less stress that I have. So like for me, when I'm like trying to force a move, or like for instance, like there's a NYU graduation on Tuesday. So, you know, I was trying to like be done by like 10:30 in the morning. And in when I was trying to do that, when I was trying to be done really early, that's when I find myself like getting absolutely smoked. Like I took like 4 trades in a day, which I hadn't even taken like 4 trades, like all of, I think I'd taken 6 trades all of the previous week. So for me to take 4 trades an hour, you know, that's really upping the average. And so, and then that's when I get chopped up. So for me right now inside this market, it's, you know, systematic strategy, stop super tight. You know, if the move is working, I'll typically take some off on like 2 or 3 big fails. You know, I'll take about half off and then let the rest ride so that I can capture the majority of that move. However, that being said, any big swipe up, like I just keep moving my stop down. And so even like there's like, let's take Friday. Like when I had taken all my puts off, it was because I gotten stopped out like the last few. And immediately after that, I mean, the market went for like new lows. And I was like, damn. But then to the same token, you know, at the end of the day, I was feeling a little lucky, because just think about if I was like this market's going to shit and just didn't cut any. I mean, my same exact puts ended the day down 40%, even though the market ended like, I think, basically flat. So those are the type of situations where, what's the saying? Bulls, bears, and pigs get slaughtered.
Pigs and bears can get fat. Bulls and bears can both eat, but pigs get slaughtered.
Yeah, I think that's it. But this is the type of market where I think like this, where I think that saying really comes in handy, because truthfully, you know, if you did have a complete bias and you weren't just going to take the meat of the move, I mean, yesterday you could have had a massive day, and then you know, the last 30 minutes give it all back and probably end red. even more red than when the market was up a percent because of decay if you're swinging options and stuff. So nail and bail, biggest thing, take that meat of the move, continue to move those stops down. Because even though if you can catch the trend, in like that 2% trend, let's call it, yeah, you can make a lot of money. However, if you get caught and the trend changes, you can get smoked. So scale out along the way, make sure that you're moving your stops down and don't have that bias.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the craziest surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL Draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
All right, and is there anything else you want to touch on before we go into Hunter's big audio file?
No, I think I'm ready to dive into the Bitcoin.
All right.
First off, if you guys want to follow Hunter, Twitter is at HuntingFinance. And so, as you guys know from Wednesday's episode, Hunter had sent in 2 audio files talking about Bitcoin. And so, basically, we went over the files, we listened to them. You know, we're gonna talk about it. And so the first thing that I wanted to say was, Hunter, thank you so much, bro, for doing this. We've never really done anything like this. And so just huge shout out to you. Thank you for doing this and for caring. You know, we always want you guys to voice your opinions. You know, times you agree and especially times when you don't agree. That's the beauty of the market, I think. I'm talking specifically about the market, but even just like most things in finance, you know, like you can completely disagree and both be right. You know, like I could say that Dan and I could both say that like the market, I could say the market's overvalued and Dan could say that the market's undervalued and we both would end up being right. You know, it just depends on time.
We can both be wrong too.
And we both can be wrong.
Hey guys, first off, I'd like to say I'm a huge fan of the podcast. I never miss an episode. And when I made the comments on Twitter about y'all don't know anything about Bitcoin, you really just don't understand it. It is with all due respect. I mean, you guys are stock market guys and I respect that. And you're looking at it like stock market guys. What actually made me want to voice something this time was when Hugh said one of the main arguments from Bitcoin guys is that there can only be so many Bitcoin out there. And that's great considering there's already thousands of cryptos out there. The biggest problem there is you've got to differentiate Bitcoin from the cryptocurrency market as a whole. Comparing Bitcoin to Dogecoin or Bitcoin to SHIB or anything like that is like comparing Apple to Naked Brand, or, you know, not anywhere close to in the same league as a company, much less it is a league of a market cap. Bitcoin is the oldest crypto, is the first crypto, and it is one of the only fully decentralized cryptos.
So inside this clip, Hunter said he talked about, you know, Bitcoin being the oldest crypto and comparing it to Doge. Comparing Bitcoin to Doge is like comparing Apple to Naked, which is a stock that I hadn't thought about in a pretty long time. So I thought that...
Yeah, that has been a minute.
Yeah, what's that thing trading at? Did you see just a little side note, did you see SXTC got down to like 9 cents or something?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of real bangers from the COVID days that are, some might say, undervalued now, or maybe just the proper value.
Yeah, yeah. So getting back to the crypto, the one thing that I will say is that if I want an exposure to crypto like the market, all cryptos pretty much feel like they go up and down with Bitcoin. So I feel like if I were to take, you know, any altcoin, or not just any, but like, let's just take like Ethereum. You know, if I were to take Ethereum, you know, I would assume that kind of goes, you know, up and down with Bitcoin, and Ethereum is significantly cheaper. So it's kind of like, you know, do I want to buy the SPX that's trading at thousands of dollars, or do I want to buy SPY, which is trading at a few hundred dollars? You know, I can get more shares, just like I can get more Ethereum. To me, I go back to thinking of like the S&P 500 when I'm thinking about, you know, Bitcoin. And this is one of Hunter's critiques was that we think too much about the stock market when we're thinking about crypto. And so when I think of Bitcoin, though, I think of it like the S&P 500, like everything kind of revolves around it. It's the nucleus. It's the center of the planets. However, the difference, though, and this is my issue with it, is that the S&P is diversified with historically strong companies. Bitcoin is just an asset class. That really scares me, because at any time, you know, let's just say that I don't even know, but like, you know, S&P 500, let's just say that Apple is a complete fraud. Yeah, the S&P 500 is going to get smoked. But if Apple goes down 100%, you know, the S&P 500, you know, will get smoked, but it will not go down 100%. Bitcoin, on the other hand, although, like I said, I'm kind of comparing it to the S&P 500. If that goes down 100%, you know, everything else gets smoked with it. You know what I mean? Like, I hope that kind of makes sense.
And also, this is my quick conspiracy theory. This guy's Yates investing. He sounds kind of like Yates. So,
Hunter's, Hunter, I think it's his profile picture or his cover photos. It kind of looks like
it's
the mountains.
My neck of the woods. Yeah.
Cryptocurrency wasn't created to be another asset that we trade. Cryptocurrency was invented, Bitcoin specifically, was invented with the purpose of radically changing the financial system as we know it. Instead of everything going through a central bank, a central authority that controls when to print, how much to print, you know, that completely changes the financial policy on a whim, like we've seen last year with all the printing, and now we've got hyperinflation. We're not quite in hyperinflation yet, but I believe it's coming. You have those problems because there's a central authority changing things on a whim. In Bitcoin, there is no central authority. Not one single person couldn't change how Bitcoin operates. Because of that, you end up with a fully decentralized finance system with a set number of coins. There can only ever be 21 million Bitcoin. There could be as many crypto out there as anybody wants to create. I mean, you can go create a PJIR crypto tomorrow if you want to, and put out a billion of them and sell them all for a dollar a coin. If people buy them, great. And they could trade right alongside on Binance or anywhere else that you can get it to accept your coin. There's nothing stopping you from doing that. It's just code. It's just computer code and programming a blockchain. You can copy. In fact, a lot of blockchains, if you go to their website, make it really easy to fork off of and build on. I mean, you can go to Tron's website or Ethereum, and I mean, a lot of them have guides where you can build on their blockchain. Not even have to start from scratch. But as far as Bitcoin itself, there is only ever going to be 21 million Bitcoin. And for that reason, that's where in the long term, it creates a hedge against inflation. It's not here now. Yes, right now, when the stock market crashes, Bitcoin crashes. But that's mainly due to most of the trading action is coming from Wall Street guys.
So I'm just going to read a quote from that last clip. Crypto was not intended to be a crypto that we trade. It was invented to radically change the financial system as we know it. So the one thing that I'll say is that I guess we're going to have to agree to disagree, you know, on this part, because I really my issue with it, if I'm understanding it right, Hunter, is that we're saying that this will be a tool to fight inflation, but it's not right now. So if I'm understanding that part right, my only issue with it is that if it's not right now, then when? You know, like when Bitcoin, are we saying like when Bitcoin gets more circulated? You know, if Bitcoin's, you know, purpose was to, you know, part of it to fight inflation, And we are seeing inflation at 40-year highs, and Bitcoin's not doing its job. I would typically call that a failure. If its job is to fight inflation, and we're seeing 40-year high of inflation, and it's doing the exact opposite right now, I would call that a failure. So I guess like more of my question is like, I understand that, you know, that you said that, you know, it not right now, but when, you know, like if it was going to act, you know, as an inflation tool, this would be the perfect opportunity. You know, I think like that's my only comment there.
Yeah, no, I think it definitely showed that. I mean, everything was crashing. I just remember, I always go back to that day where the market halted down because of COVID, and the same time Bitcoin went from it. You know, it had been feathering around that 10K mark, but then at that day, it was like, you know what? We're no longer 9. We're no longer 8. We are 3K. That was it.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first round selections and all the crazy surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get 3 wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Yeah.
With only 21 million Bitcoin ever coming, there you can't print more. Where next year they can print another $1 trillion if they want to, there's never going to be more than the 21 million Bitcoin. And it's on a schedule. I mean, anybody can look up the schedule for the halvings of Bitcoin and see when they're going to lower the block reward. The halvings is every, I think it's about 4 years, if I'm not mistaken, they do a halving. And what that halving is the block reward goes down. So like when Bitcoin first started, the block reward was say like 50. So you'd get 50 Bitcoin for every block that was solved by a miner. And now we're down to 6.5 Bitcoins for a block currently.
Hunter just talked about having a Bitcoin. I think that's really cool. And it kind of gives an incentive. I do like that you can't print more Bitcoin, if you will, and that there's only 21 million. I do love that. And I do agree that that definitely is like an upside to Bitcoin. The halving, I think is a really interesting concept, because I would think that as, you know, there gets to be less Bitcoins out there, that you would want
the amount that are being made. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. That's what I meant. Is that I would think that as there's less Bitcoin, like I think, what is there left? Like there's like 2 million left or something?
Let me see. Okay, so as of June 2021, so, you know, so I guess it was 18.74 million out of a total of 21 million. So let's say we're at 19 right now. So yeah, 2 million left.
Okay, yeah. So there's about 2 million Bitcoins left to mine. So I would think that as there's less Bitcoins to mine, you know, making it harder to mine, that and more expensive, that you would want to incentivize, you know, that you would want to incentivize more by, instead of halving, but increasing, you know, the amount of Bitcoin that you get. So I think like the next halving, Hunter said, would be 3.5. You know, I would think that as it gets more difficult, you know, having it would turn more people away. And I would think that you would want to do the exact opposite.
The way, from my understanding, because I used to be big into the halving. There's one article, I swear to God, you can read it on the halving, and you'll have your life saving in Bitcoin in 30 minutes. Like, so obviously it costs like money to mine them because you're using energy from your computer.
Yeah.
And so, and you know, if you're mining more, you have fucking hella computers doing that shit. So whenever it's halved and the amount you're mining is less, it's bad for the people mining because they will be making less money, right? And they need to offset basically their electricity fee. So the thought of it is Bitcoin price goes up after the halving, which makes it still efficient for the people mining. But, you know, if it doesn't, the price doesn't properly go up, you know, it's not effective for miners to keep mining.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm saying is that I would think, you know, especially if the price of Bitcoin isn't at highs, you know, less and less people would want to mine. So that I do think that it's cool though that there's only 21 million. I do love that. So yeah, so cool.
Typically, if it follows the long term trend, we're gonna pull back for about a year, and then we'll have a bull run right up into the next halving, and that's when it shoots up. The big shoot up was right after the last halving. That's whenever we had the big halving before. The big run up was due to a halving. It coincided with a lot of stock market run and stuff, and that's where it hit all these new all-time highs and got everybody's attention again. And now everybody's saying, oh, it's dead again. This has been happening in Bitcoin.
So this is difficult for me. One, I've never put two and two together, so I think that that's really interesting about you know, the bull run into the halving, and then you know, typically it having this big explosion to the upside. I will be excited to see what happens. However, this kind of reminds me of technical analysis and like when people talk about like the golden cross on like certain charts and stuff. And that goes back to the argument I always give with technical analysis. If technical analysis worked, you know, that well, then everyone who did it would be billionaires. Now, I understand there are a lot of Bitcoin billionaires, so I will give you that. However, if it was that simple, you know, I mean,
and you got to think there's only been what, three halving so far, 2012, 2016, 2020. Yeah. Yeah, I think the next one is probably what, 2024. I mean, the thing is, like, it has been spot on every single time, but there also has only been so few of them that it's like, you know, I mean, it always, like in 2017, how I had the run to 17K, then drop back down, then you had the fucking run to 69K, drop back down. So,
well, that's,
I mean, it really does follow that trend pretty fucking well.
No, exactly. And that's why it kind of reminds me of the 200 moving average for the stock market. You know, I think inside the past 100 years, it's only gone below there twice. And actually, we're coming up pretty close to it now. But historically, it usually bounces at that. So that's kind of what this reminds me of. You know, that like, yes, historically, it does typically do this into a halving. But, you know, I still think that it kind of reminds me of technical analysis.
The biggest thing that I just wanted to point out with this, and the reason I made the comment, is you have to differentiate Bitcoin from crypto. It is a cryptocurrency, but you can't make a comparison between Bitcoin and Dogecoin or Bitcoin and Ethereum even. Because Bitcoin, the guy who founded it, Satoshi Nakamoto, he completely walked away. Nobody even knows who he is. There's been multiple people come out and claim that they are Satoshi Nakamoto, the guy who started Bitcoin. And basically the Bitcoin community said, well, here, sign a wallet with the first Bitcoin in it that was ever mined when you started Bitcoin. And they refused to do it. I mean, that's in the crypto world, that's a fairly easy process. You can sign it, post it. It doesn't hurt anything, but it proves that you own the very first Bitcoin that was ever produced. And you could prove that they were Satoshi Nakamoto. Since they won't do that, highly unlikely that they are who they say they are. And because there is not that central authority there anymore, it is a completely distributed system. When China banned it, you know, the blocks come in a little bit slower for a while, then the auto difficulty adjustment kicked in and everything went on like normal. There can be disruptions happen to Bitcoin, but so far it stood test after test after test between the block wars from where Bitcoin Cash was created to the China bans to every other kind of regulation or sanction that's been put on them by other countries. and even the government threatening regulation now, I don't even think the United States government can stop Bitcoin at this point. It's too big and it's too distributed. The only way to shut down Bitcoin would be to shut down the internet.
So to Hunter's point, I totally agree that Bitcoin is the leader of the pack. Similar to what we talked about earlier about the, you know, again, it's the S&P 500 of crypto. That being said, that last line that Hunter said, to shut down Bitcoin, you'd have to shut down the internet. Now, one of the biggest risks when I think about Bitcoin and crypto is that what if the government creates a coin? Not that that threatens Bitcoin, but like how would that affect Bitcoin? Is what I'm like. I just think there's so much unknown with Bitcoin that it scares me. You know, it's really like the unknown scares me. Like I don't really know. You know, maybe it would help it if the government created a coin, but it's kind of like the unknown and the uncertainty that kind of scares me. And then the second thing is that Bitcoin's not really tracked or taxed right now, and I guess that's why a lot of people like it.
You get taxed on it if you buy and sell like a stock.
Yeah, but like they don't. I mean, so I know that they have that new form or whatever, but I don't think it's like really regulated as much as like we think. Like you don't have to, you know, like you don't have to right now. You know, I'm not asked when I go to the bank or whatever, like how many Bitcoin you have. Or like a perfect example is, you know, have you ever gotten a bond? I've never been through this, but let's just say you're arrested, okay, hypothetically, it's just, well, I'm just saying, like, let's just say you're arrested or something,
I've been arrested 5 times, man. We don't have to make a hypothetical.
Well, that's what I said. I asked you like if you've ever had a bond.
Oh, I thought you meant like bonds.
Oh, like, no. I mean like a
dude, we went over this fucking 2 weeks ago. I told you. I had no fucking idea what they were.
I mean like
I always got out on bail, man. Come on.
I'm saying though that doesn't the judge usually ask you, do you have any assets? How much do you have in cash? How much do you gold?
Okay, so my parents would. I never talked to a judge like that, so I don't. Okay, I need. We'll go watch some jail shows, and I'll. Get back to you on this.
Well, but so my point is, my whole point to this is that when you get arrested and you're facing a judge, he or she will ask if you have, you know, any collateral. Basically, you know, how much do you have in cash? How much do you have in assets, etc. Until a judge asks, how much do you have in crypto? I don't really feel like the government is taking it that seriously. And so my point to this is that what happens when they start putting regulation on it, or if they do it all, start putting regulation on it and they start to track it more, you know, how does that affect it? You know, that's like the biggest thing, you know, like I'm not saying one way or the other. I'm just saying that like it kind of worries me in a way because there's so much unknown with Bitcoin.
Personally, for the most part, I just buy it and I hold it, or I mine it and I keep it, because I honestly believe Bitcoin is a solution to a lot of problems. I may be wrong. I don't have all my money there. I think it's foolish to put all your money in anything, even cash. Putting money all in cash, that's just as foolish as putting all of it in Bitcoin. I've got money in crypto. I've got money in stocks. I've got some small altcoins I own. You know, just always diversify is always a sound strategy, but.
So, Hunter, we will agree to disagree about the solving of the issues because I just don't know how it plays out. You know, it totally could become the new world currency in the next decade, you know, and solve all the issues. And or it could, you know, become, you know,
an obsolete. El Salvador takes over.
Yeah. Becomes the richest nation. Yeah. You know, or it could not. And so I'm just going to agree to disagree because I just don't. You know, I mean, we just don't know yet. You know, we'll have to see how it plays out. But the one thing, you know, I do love that last part about, even if you truly believe something is going to be like the next Jesus himself, not putting all of your money into it and diversifying it. I love that. I love that so much. I think that that's awesome, especially hearing it from someone who, you know, is so passionate about Bitcoin and so passionate about crypto. You know, I think that that's, you know, just a really good reminder. And it's really cool to hear coming from you. And then, so this was pretty much everything from the first clip. However, a little shameless, ego gas from Hunter, a little clip that we wanted to include.
I am a huge, once again, huge fan of the podcast. You guys have taught me more about investing than I had known the rest of my life up to that the point that I found y'all's podcast. By no means, I mean no disrespect with my comment. Whenever I come at y'all saying y'all didn't know anything about Bitcoin, it's just every time I've heard y'all talk about cryptocurrency, I kind of cringe a little bit.
And the second clip is more in response to our Wednesday's episode on the spoofing, correct?
Yeah, yeah. So this second clip that we're about to dive into, now I will say that this one's a little bit shorter, mostly because, and I learned, you know, some stuff from Hunter, because this one I really just didn't, I never read. This is like a different language to me, kind of. I'd found that thread and I found it really interesting. But I just thought that it was really cool. And so we can start the second clip now.
The Tether is essentially, they act like a bank on crypto. They hold assets and reserves and issue tokens worth a dollar a piece and hold assets to back it up. But the only difference between them and a modern day bank is they actually have 100% reserves. But most of it's in U.S. treasuries and other cash equivalents. There's only about 6% of their reserves, according to their website, held in digital coin. Even if all that was Bitcoin, it still makes up a small part of the reserves. So that's about the only tie to Bitcoin they have. So I don't see how either of those is tied into the Bitcoin price manipulation.
Again, like I really, you know, I find that really interesting. It's pretty much just from what I've read and I've heard. I think that that's really cool. But I really don't know, you know, enough about it.
Bitcoin doesn't trade like a stock. It trades on multiple exchanges. So you don't just trade on the New York Stock Exchange or just the NASDAQ. It trades on multiple large exchanges and all sorts of peer-to-peer exchanges all across the internet. Just a quick internet data point here. Of about the largest, 10 of the large exchanges. I'm not going to say largest, but 10 of the large exchanges. They've done about $3.8 billion worth of Bitcoin volume, trading volume in the last 24 hours. Of that $3.8 billion, Coinbase only makes up about $918 million of that. So even of just the large exchanges, if you take out all the peer-to-peer exchanges, there's only about 25% of the volume of the large exchanges. So unless they're spoofing multiple of these exchanges at once, what would happen is they would just push up the price on Coinbase. And if they push it up 5 or 10,000 over what it is on, say, Kraken, then the people on Kraken would just buy Bitcoin on Kraken, send it to Coinbase and sell it for 10,000 more than they just paid for it on Kraken. And that would push the price on Coinbase back down. So the only viable way to push the price up that way is if you're spoofing it on a large portion of the exchanges.
I just figured that's what they were, you know, fuck, let me recite that. So when I was reading originally about the spoofing and all the different, you know, potential games that were being played, I just figured that that's exactly what they were doing, was that they had some kind of algorithm where they had some kind of program that synced up and went across all exchanges. You know, like that's pretty much what I thought that they were doing. I thought that was possible. But again, I really just don't know enough. You know, I imagine that inside this day and age, with all the different software developers out there, that that this would be possible. But again, you know, maybe not.
Moving on to where Hugh talked about the intrinsic value of Bitcoin. With a company, of course, you can look at the product and the management team and the revenues and assets and liabilities. You don't have that with Bitcoin. Yes, Bitcoin is currently an asset that is traded. It was created to be a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. If you look up the Bitcoin website, you can look at the white paper that was wrote by the guy who created it before he turned it on. And that was what his vision was. That's what it was created for. Like I said, he's since walked away, or his NIM that he used to create it, the Satoshi Nakamoto, has walked away. He may be still involved in the project under a different name. Nobody really knows that. Doesn't matter. The intrinsic value of Bitcoin is best broke down, in my opinion, in three different categories. You've got the network. It is a robust and resilient network because you got miners and nodes that are validating transactions distributed all over the world. So if one country says, we don't like Bitcoin anymore, if you use Bitcoin in our country and we find out about it, we're coming to arrest you. They completely shut down Bitcoin in that country. Every other country in the world can continue using Bitcoin like normal because you've got miners and you got nodes all over the world. You'd have to shut down the global internet to stop Bitcoin. That's the first point of the Bitcoin's intrinsic value. It's a distributed, robust network that does not have a single person controlling it that can turn it on or off or manipulate it if they please. The second point is the scarcity. Like I touched on in the last recording, there's only ever going to be 21 million Bitcoin. There's about 19 million right now. So you only got about 2 million more Bitcoin to come out. And because of the halving, the flow is slowing down every 4 years. So new coins are coming on the market at a lower pace. That's the second point, is just the scarcity. Get more demand, less new supply coming in. That's going to cause the price to go up. The third point for Bitcoin's intrinsic value is the utility. If you use Bitcoin as it's intended, it is a really amazing technology. The fact that you can send Bitcoin to anybody in the world with no third-party interference, no need for exchange, just need an address sent there, no middleman, my wallet to your wallet, anywhere in the world, is amazing. Take the Russia example right now, where they shut down SWIFT. They shut down a lot of the banking going in and out of Russia. Yes, that hurt Russia, which, I mean, is a good. They shouldn't be invading Ukraine, in my opinion. I'm not supporting Russia by any means. But shutting down the banking in the entire country hurts the citizens, too. And so if theoretically you had a family member in Russia and they were saying, well, I can't access any of my money right now because of all this going on. And you're like, look, find somebody that will take Bitcoin. I'll send you Bitcoin. You can pay for your food or your, you know, whatever your needs are in that. And as long as they've got internet connection, they can download a Bitcoin wallet, send an address, you know, send me the address, and I can send them Bitcoin. There's no, you know, Putin can't stop that unless he shuts off the internet. The United States can't tell me I can't do it because unless they shut off my internet, the Bitcoin network. Send the money wherever I please.
So, Hunter, maybe like I'm thinking about this wrong. I get the freedom of Bitcoin that it allows. However, if someone like my mom asked me, you know, why is Bitcoin worth $38,000? You know, like what are the metrics to justify this price? I really feel like my only response is because it's limited supply and someone will pay that price, or someone has paid that price. You know, other than that, I really don't know. I really have no answer, and I can't find an answer for like why it's valued at that price. You know, like just because someone will buy a pack of gum for $20 doesn't necessarily mean that it's worth that $20. And I think like that's my worry, is that like when we start to use like a crypto, you know, let's just call it like a crypto valuation technique, you know, like what says that it's worth that, other than the fact that, you know, there's just limited supply pushing up the price, you know, limited supply pushing up the price, and the fact that someone will pay that price, you know, like, I mean, you know, it's like sometimes when you see those crazy prints on different stocks, you know, like someone accidentally buys after hours on the ask, and like the spread is like 6%, like, you know, just because that dumbass bought that, or excuse me, my mom gets mad when I curse, just because that dummy buys, you know, on the ask after hours, doesn't necessarily mean that that's worth that price. That's pretty much how my only question. I do love the Russia example and 100% get it. Hell, I mean, I paid for a plane ticket with Ethereum, and so I think it's really cool. I think the Russia example is a perfect example, and I don't know. I just think it's cool.
So that's the third part, is just the utility of what it can do, what it, the potential for commerce, the potential to move value anywhere in the world, even like escaping authoritarian regimes. There's people put all their wealth in Bitcoin, memorized the seed phrase of the wallet, walked across the border with nothing, got a new phone or new computer when they got across the border, and redownloaded their wallet, entered their seed phrase, and all their wealth was there. Where if you try to do that with gold bars or cash, they just take it.
The only thing that I really have to say about this is that I love that, and I totally agree. You know, it goes back to the last clip. I think that that's a really, really cool feature of Bitcoin and crypto in and of itself. And you know, and I think it's great. I think it's great, especially, you know, the fact that, like, you're not getting smoked on fees and stuff like Western Union. Yeah, really all I have to say is that I love it and I totally agree.
All right. Well, this should be a kind of a longer one because we did have a third guest. But we hope you guys liked it. I'm sure we'll have a lot of rebuttals and I'm sure we'll probably have to do this shit again. But we love the interaction. And if you guys have anything similar you guys want to do, we can do it just the same. Reach out and fucking we'll get a voice recording and do it like we did this one. So we hope you guys like this one. Give us your feedback and we will see you guys on Wednesday. Peace.
Penny's Going in Raw is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the craziest surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL Draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.